It's on.
Oh, yes.
Roll call, please, so we know we have a quorum. Here.
Here.
Agenda number 9, authorize the chief executive officer to award and execute, and it is on the screen. So,
Yes, Madam Chair. This is a follow-up on the State Route 710 gap closure project pursuant to the board's direction for Metro staff to pursue an environmental document. We have advertised and are asking for board authority to award and execute a contract to CH2M Hill in the amount of $37,300,000 for the technical work necessary to do an environmental document on the State Route 710 gap closure. We're also asking for contract modification authority up to 15% of the contract value to cover cost of potentially unforeseen issues that may arise during environmental engineering and community participation. And I'm here with Frank Kwan, and we did have some great staff work by Michelle Smith on this project, so we're here if there are any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the board?
Yeah, I've got a couple on this. I'm trying to figure out, Doug, if you could or can help us. We have the one contract at 37.3 for CH2. I don't have any sense of how that compared to the second or third bidders in there. I mean, was the scoring virtually equal? Was the scoring not even close? You know, are the personnel who were involved in this contract folks who have experience? I mean, I don't have any sense of any of that because I don't have any of that.
Right. The in prices, because it's an A&E contract, we only opened the price schedule from the selected firm. So we didn't have any cost proposals that were open from any of the firms pursuant to the process by which we select A&E contracts. The professional services scoring, there were four teams. All were very close. I mean, they were all – everybody brought out their A team. All the teams were excellent. The proposal that was put together, this team did slightly edge out the other teams, and it was very close scoring. So we only opened the one cost proposal for this one firm, and then we negotiated a price from there.
As part of that, though, process, does the staff go into the detail? Is, for instance, the environmental manager project part of the project team, somebody who's got extensive background in doing environmental work? I mean, the project manager, I mean, because, you know, I hear different things. By the way, one of the things that's really annoying to me, and I'm not sure who to be annoyed at, so watch out. But I heard from third parties about the results of this before I knew the results of it. And I don't know where in the organization people are talking outside, and I know you're not, obviously. I mean, I know that. But when I start getting calls from people on behalf of one of the two or three of the bidders, and I haven't even seen the stuff yet, and they're telling me who won, what it costs, and all that, I get a little concerned about what our internal safeguards are.
Yeah, and I share some of those concerns. I received some of the same phone calls before I had, you know, any briefings from staff.
That's also even scarier.
The cost proposal, so that is something, I mean, that's a good point, and we need to talk to our I think we'll consult with our both procurement and other staff if there's some additional safeguards on that process. Those things do bother me, too, although this is a very big contract. It was being watched very closely by a lot of people, so I think a lot of people had their ear to the ground for any rumblings that were out there. The way we select the process is the team that's doing this, it's a very deep team. They brought in a large number of consultants. We're very pleased with the team they put together. It's a very broad team because the initial analysis is going to be very broad. At this point in time, it's geographically large. It's mode large. The teams that we're looking at have broad in-depth experience in doing environmental documents of a complex nature within this area, as all the teams brought their best people forward for this project. So we're very comfortable that the team is capable.
So even though you only open up the price part of this, the procurement staff goes through all the project managers and their quals and all the other various people who are going to be part of the team and checks that or checks the references or checks the claims that are made by them in their presentations?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. I'm a little concerned just, you know, because of some of the questions that were raised on this. You said it's a big contract for a lot of money on a project that's, you know, never been easy, as we know. And I'm just trying to make sure we get it right on this thing. So, okay. Let me just think about it for a sec. But thanks, Doug. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Director O'Connor, you have any questions or comments? All right. Then I'm going to go to public input. First individual to speak is Barbara Messina, Vice Mayor of Alhambra, to be followed by Leland Dalsey, and then Susan Boland. Hi.
Good afternoon, Chairman Dubois and members of the committee. We are here today to speak in support of your agenda item 9, the award of the EIR-EIS contract to move forward with the 710 Gap Closure Project. This long-awaited action responds in full to the Metro Board's action in May and June of 2010. As a long-term member of SCAG's Transportation Committee and First Vice President of the San Gabriel Valley COG, I can say with confidence that the EIR-EIS will show that the 710 Gap Closure is critical to the future of the region as it provides both a significant reduction in air pollution and significant improvement in traffic congestion. It will be shown that no other project, including subway and transit projects, deliver the same level of benefits. Boy, that went quick. Thank you, and I urge you to support this contract. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Leland Dalsey, to be followed by Susan Boland.
Good afternoon, members of the board. I just wanted to say, probably in duplicate to Ms. Messina, that we're fully aware that this is simply a matter of awarding the contract and not any final issue at all. We look to a three-year process coming up and a very thorough process. We would like to ask the committee to recall, as we've said many times, that this is a Measure R project. We have an obligation to the voters of Los Angeles County to follow through on it. And I would also say there's some really fine projects that are underway right now that are Measure R. We'd like to get caught up with those. Thank you.
Susan Boland to be followed by Ron Miller.
Hello. I'm Susan Boland from La Crescenta. The No 710 Action Committee submitted a chunk of comments during the scoping period, and I appreciate your description, Mr. Failing, on the internal safeguards. However, we have a little concern. What we had requested specifically when it came to the RFP was to make sure that each of the companies that were seriously considered would be investigated and would be dismissed, the candidates that are involved in fraud, corruption, misconduct, breach of contract, or have work that's resulting in death or injury. We thought that's a pretty reasonable request. A simple Google search has revealed that CH2M Hill had a little problem with the city of LA with regard to the mitigation of dust in the Owens Valley project. There was a lawsuit based on overbilling by subcontractors, and we would be interested in the list of subcontractors that might be involved, and we would say that you need to look at this carefully. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I have a documentation, if anybody would like to have this. This would be the No 710 Action Committee. Thank you so much.
Ron Miller to be followed by Amy Ho.
Good afternoon. I'm Ron Miller. I'm a council rep for the LA Orange County Building Trades.
We represent 140,000 craftsmen and women. 20,000 of them are apprentices. We're training the workforce for tomorrow. And we want you to approve this program. This thing is going to eventually put 29,000 craftspeople to work. And right now with 40 to 50% unemployment across the construction trades, we desperately need these jobs. Guys and gals that were working 2 years ago, happily motoring along, making their house payments, are now losing their houses. 2 years later, they've been out of work, and there's not a sign of it getting better right now. So we need this work. We need to get this thing approved. Thank you.
Last I have is Amy Ho.
Good afternoon, Chair Dubois and members of the committee. My name is Amy Ho, and I represent the City Council.
We can't get
closer to you, please.
There you go.
I represent the City of Monterey Park, the City Council of the City of Monterey Park, in support of Item 9. Monterey Park has been supportive of the completion of the 710 freeway and has a longstanding resolution to that effect on file. Please approve this item to move forward with the EIR and to on the 710 freeway. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's all. Those are all the requests I had for public input. What is the pleasure? Any other questions or comments from the committee?
One more question. Who's the project manager on this?
Michelle Smith is our project manager on it, Michelle. Thank you. But this is one where Frank Quad and I will be paying close attention.
Is there a project manager on the, who's the project manager on the CH2 side?
What's the name? PM? Was it Yoga?
Yeah.
Yoga Chandran?
Do we, and I don't know this person, but do we know that person's experience?
Yes. I'm very familiar with Yoga Chandran and his experience, and I've worked with him. He's an exceedingly competent gentleman.
Thanks, Doug.
Mm-hmm. Comments?
You know, I'm.
You're not comfortable.
I'm not comfortable yet. I'm fine with it going to the board without recommendation. You know, just to give us another week to sort of get comfortable with it, or even holding it, whatever you think is right.
Well, no. Tell me, are you uncomfortable about the process that was followed? Are you uncomfortable about the fact that there were leaks? Are you uncomfortable about everything?
It's just a rough Wednesday, so.
Well, no. We all have those days.
Yeah. No. I mean, separate out. I mean, yes, I'm very uncomfortable about the leaks in the process that led to that, and I think, you know, we'll work with MTA, you know, executives afterward to deal with that. That's a whole separate concern other than the contract. I just am concerned in terms of the qualifications, and, I mean, I know CH2 is a big company. I know they've done good work, and they've also had problems like Owens Valley. You know, I mean, all big companies have. I'm just not sure yet that I'm comfortable with how this whole thing was put together in terms of, the problem, I guess, and I don't know why if this one's different or why we don't, for instance, get the scores of the companies or at least get to see how close it was and figure out, you know, if it's all things being equal, why A over B and something like that. It's a broader concern, but it's really come sort of home in this one. We have no way of knowing. I appreciate Doug volunteering that it was close, but we have no way of knowing, you know, how this particular one was chosen. What was it that put it over the top if they were close? That kind of thing. And
okay, let me.
Frank, I'll be honest. I don't even know who the other proposers were. So, you know.
I don't either. But let me ask a basic question, sure. Because I don't have the tenure that a lot of you do. A&E, architectural engineering. What does that mean?
The A&E, architectural and engineering, is a professional service contract that's guided by the Brooks Act under federal law. And there's similar provisions in state law, which requires us to follow a most qualified selection process. So you evaluate all the teams, their project managers, the various elements of the team. You sit them all down. Interview is not required, but quite often we do an interview for one like this. There was an interview. The teams came in. The teams did a presentation on their understanding of the project, what their approach would be, brought their key players in. We had a chance to go face-to-face, a team of people both in Metro and outside of Metro, so it's not just a few people. There's a team of five people this time, Frank?
Yes.
We had five people sit down and evaluate each and every team. They score them independently. Then you aggregate those team scores, and based on the Brooks Act, you select the most qualified team. And it's, again, we had everybody brought out their A team. They're all excellent teams. And once you select the most qualified team, then you are allowed to discuss price with only that top-ranking team. And you negotiate then a price with that team. If you're unable to negotiate a competent price with that team, then you are then and only then are you allowed to go to the second highest ranked team and begin to negotiate price based on the fact that you're unable to conclude an adequate negotiation with that first team.
Okay, so it kind of negates the lowest responsible bidder.
Yeah, and in fact, it is very specific that price is not to be a consideration in the selection of the most qualified team. Because it is a professional service, you're supposed to select the most qualified and then negotiate a price under provisions.
Okay. So it's an extensive interview system.
It's an extensive rating system. Each of these teams produced very thick books of information on all of their team members, their principal team members. Those books were reviewed by our five raters, and then all the teams came in and did an interview, did a presentation based on their approach to the project. They were all scored, and then those scores were aggregated to select the top-ranking team.
And it's done by the procurement. By our procurement folks.
Procurement is the guardians of the system, and they sit on the selection. There are technical experts from staff, so I had people on that. There are technical experts from outside of Metro that also sat on that selection team, so that way you avoid having any one particular group or subgroup being able to preform opinions. And the raters are guided through the process. I'm not collaborating, you know, except for at times when they are allowed to have open discussions together after they've all gone through and formed their opinions.
Okay, thank you. And with all of that information, I would like, if there are no objections from the rest of the committee, to move this forward without recommendation.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I agree with what you're proposing. And I assume the people on our staff certainly are qualified and have experience in these fields when they're doing the evaluation, or they wouldn't be there. What are the safeguards with folks outside our staff who sit in on the valuation?
Yeah, we select them, and they are people that are, in this case, they are individuals who are very qualified to sit on this kind of a selection. We look at their background. Procurement looks at their background to make sure that they have qualifications in the area as well.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Then if there are no objections, we'll move it to the board without recommendation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Item on the agenda, countywide call for projects.
Sorry.
Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Brad McAllister. I'm here with Heather Hills of my staff. We're at the final step of the year-long call for projects process, and we're coming forward with a recommendation on the 2011 call for projects. We have a short presentation for you just to explain where we've been and where we're here today. We are recommending approval of the call for projects items A through G in your board report. We received 180 applications in this call, totaling over $870 million. In June, when staff released what's called the Rainbow Report, the preliminary staff recommendation, we had recommendations for 64 projects totaling $105 million. Since June, TAC has completed its appeal process, and it heard appeals from eight agencies appealing 21 projects. And in this cycle, TAC also had the responsibility to recommend projects for funding that hadn't been committed through the deobligation, as well as a reserve that the board had set aside for TAC to look at this time. And so TAC has made recommendations on those projects. It was a very good process, and staff is in full agreement with TAC's recommendation. So at this point, we're recommending 72 projects totaling $123.5 million. And just to give you a sense of the projects that, that TAC did recommend, in the RSTI category, six projects that were partially funded have been fully funded, and we had additional two projects added to that category. The bikeway category, three additional projects were funded. Pedestrian category, two additional projects. And in transit capital, one project that was fully funded has additional funding to it, as well as one additional project. I'm not going to go through this, but this kind of gives you the sense, mode by mode, of what's being recommended for the 72 projects totaling $123.5 million, which is the column furthest to your right, the amount of call money recommended. It is important for the board to take action on the call this month because we're feeding into the TIP cycle. So if upon board approval this month, we would organize in October an applicant for the successful applicants to do a workshop for them. And the projects go to SCAG for inclusion into their TIP for the winter, as well as to Caltrans for approval, and on to the CTC and the feds in the spring for inclusion in the STIP and the FTIP. We also have with us today Jano Bagdanian, who is the TAC representative, and I'd like to call him forward to come and give a few words on behalf of TAC.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Jano Bagdanian, Traffic Transportation Administrator, City of Glendale. I'm here on behalf of the TAC, recommending the board approval of the TAC motion regarding the 2011 call for projects. It was, as was stated by staff, was a very good process. In this cycle, we were able to address some of the projects that were not funded originally as part of the process, and then with the deobligation funding available, we were able to make the recommendations for some of the eligible projects. With that, that concludes my comments. If I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments from the board before we go to request to speak? I have one request to speak from Malcolm Klugman.
About one of the things on here is on attachment F, page 17, experience LA historic cultural neighborhood connections by installing 22 kiosks that would provide information. I think people have mentioned this for a long time now. You have libraries. Libraries should be a place, if you hired one guy with a car to drive around to the different libraries, keep the schedules current, have information at the library. You might even get people who don't normally go to libraries to go to the library, and there, and you have a whole bunch of them. You don't have to build any new ones. Well, you could build some new ones, but you don't have to right now. But use libraries to give out information about transit information, because believe me, not everybody's using their BlackBerry to find out when the next bus is coming. So use analog technology that exists already.
What's the pleasure of the committee? But second? Any objections? So ordered. Item for 11, Measure R, Highway Operational Improvements, Arroyo Verdugo Subregion.
Yes, Madam Chair. Item number 11 is to approve the subregional Measure R fund reallocation. There's a proposed reallocation of previous approved Measure R highway operational improvements funding in the Arroyo Verdugo subregion. We've been working with the Arroyo Verdugo group. They're staying within their overall budget, but they wish to reallocate some of the money around to keep some projects going based on project readiness. Staff recommends an approval.
Seconded. I have no public input. Any objections? So ordered. Item number 12.
Yes, Madam Chair. Item number 12 is park and ride facilities. and we're asking for authority to approve the transfer of certain Caltrans-owned park-and-ride facilities to MTA, up to 41 park-and-ride facilities authorized to do the work necessary for that to happen, including working on the 105 amended consent decree and other things necessary to bring the listed park-and-ride lots under Metro's control.
And I have an amendment I'd like to offer. Do you want me to mention that now, or do you want to start with questions?
If you remember, the answer my question.
Okay. Well, let me
read. So it's okay with that.
Actually, yeah. It's actually a motion by myself, the directors Ridley Thomas and Supervisors Ridley Thomas and Kanabe. The recommendation before us today is seeking to undertake a program transferring up to 41 Caltrans park-and-ride facilities to MTA. In spite of the fact that Metro has for many years subsidized some semblance of maintenance of Caltrans park-and-ride facilities, the report emphasizes that, quote, dwindling resources available to Caltrans has limited its ability to maintain these facilities. It further concludes that, quote, the neglect to landscaping, trash pickup, lighting, signage, and graffiti serves to dissuade patrons from using bus, rail, and carpool services and deters potentially new transit riders from using these facilities. Nowhere in the 41 properties identified is this more evident and critical than the Artesia Transit Center, soon to be renamed the Harbor Gateway Center. We strongly support the board approval of the recommendation. However, the recommended course of action is vague and open-ended with no clear priorities of properties or any timeline as to when this effort should be completed. The recommendation lumps all 41 properties together without making any distinction between the properties that are easily transferable or those that face obstacles, such as the need to amend the I-105 consent decree. Indeed, the first action item listed is the task of, quote, authorizing staff to initiate work on amending the Interstate 105 amended final consent decree to enable transfer of the selected park-and-ride facilities along Interstate 105 and 110, unquote. There's also an absence of any discussion as to how far along Metro and Caltrans staff are in these discussions and negotiations, the degree of difficulty Metro is facing ensuring the sought-after transfers, and, as noted above, any projected timelines as to when Metro staff expects it will complete the task of transfer of any properties, let alone the ones falling under the 105 consent decree. So, we believe that the recommendation needs to be amended to identify those properties that, first, are the most critical to the completion and success of major Metro transit programs, such as the Congestion Reduction Demonstration Program and Artesia Transit Center, and, secondly, the properties posing the least amount of problems relating to property transfer. We're especially concerned over the Congestion Reduction Demonstration Program and the critical role that the Artesia Transit Center plays in its success. Given the enormous investment being made in this program, the significant investment Metro is making in the Artesia Transit Center itself, and the conclusions over the deteriorating conditions of these sites as noted above, it's imperative that the transfer of the Artesia Transit Center is accomplished in a timely manner in order to protect these respective investments. It therefore is logical that the Artesia Transit Center be the first order of business with Metro staff and Caltrans to effectuate the transfer of that property before the end of 2011. We therefore would move to the board, and hopefully the Planning Committee will support this, the recommendation the staff provides with the following provisions. The staff shall immediately focus on the transfer of the Artesia Transit Center as a first priority with the goal of completing the transfer by the end of 2011, and that staff returns to the board in October with the follow-up monthly reports that A, detail the progress of the Artesia Transit Center transfer negotiations with a timeline for the completion of the transfer. Again, this is related to the hot lanes. With B, a list prioritizing the 41 properties is reflected in the body of the motion, and see a timeline for the transfer of those properties. So,
but it helped. It helps. It's good.
You had questions.
No, I do. It's just my questioning day. I especially like the part about the Artesia Transit Center because it's an exciting project. Having said that, why does this feel to me like we're just relieving the state and Caltrans of a burden? We wind up assuming the liability on these sites right now that belongs to Caltrans.
I understand they're doing a crappy job of maintaining it, not like they used to do a couple of years ago when other guys were running the show over there. But I understand they're not doing their job over there now, or don't have the funds to do their job, or whatever it is. But it seems like we're solving their problem of having to figure out how to get the money. I don't even know what these 41 sites are going to cost us, or what account that money comes out of, Doug. I mean, I understand making them look better, and that would make potential users of them feel better about it or be more comfortable in them. And I know our sheriffs have raised some concerns on a couple of the sites also, but I can't help feeling like we're bailing out Caltrans, or at least the state, who hasn't done a whole lot for us lately.
I understand. And by the way, staff has read and is comfortable with the motion that is put forward. We're planning to get the properties at no cost to Metro, no physical cost. So we're not planning to pay a penny to acquire these lands. Because of that, at this point in time, obviously we haven't thought about how we're going to turn this into an asset, other than that it's our front door and it provides the service to primarily our riders, which is important to us. But we would, at the appropriate time, have a discussion with our asset management staff, and we think that this will be a very good deal for us at the end of the day, especially if we can acquire them for zero cost. The process we're going through, and that's part of the complication here and what you're looking at, is we're kind of making up the process as we go along because it's never been done before. So as we are using the Artesia Transit Center, a great suggestion, as the pilot to figure our way through a system at the state level to make this work. Certainly the Caltrans district staff is very supportive of this proposal. The headquarters staff seen the proposal. They're just not quite sure how to affect it yet. So we're working a process through the collateral facilities relinquishment process, because that would allow us to take these over at no cost to Metro, no land cost to Metro.
Do we take them over in stages or 41 at once?
We will take them over in stages. The process looks like it's gonna lay out just as the motion indicates, that we'll take them over in stages. We're using Artesia to work out what the process will be. Certain ones we think will be very easy, and we'll identify and work on those and put those through the process. Others will be a little more difficult because there's air rights and other things involved. Others are free and clear and should be relatively simple to do. So we're in the process of aggregating that data, and October-ish would be we should have know enough about the process by then to be able to give you estimated timelines and an aggregate of the easy ones and the more difficult ones.
Do we have a sense of what it will cost us? Have we priced out? I think first we should have the results back for the work of the asset management group before we actually take possession of these things. Just to, what if they come to the conclusion we can't do much with it?
We're fairly comfortable that there's some things we can do with these, and when we're a little hesitant to have a report in front of our hands says there's great value here, and then tell the state to give them to us for free. Yeah.
Have we at least calculated what it'll cost us to to accept liability? So what's the tab to us annually for maintenance and liability now on this thing?
Yeah, we're looking at several million dollars a year, just the maintenance of the facilities, keeping them up to the state of repair as we normally do.
Right.
And there's a couple of things that asset management have looked at. We think we'll easily offset that as we later on when we look at stuff like that. A lot of it has to do with photovoltaics and other things as an absolute minimum.
Right. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Doug.
Yep.
When I have a question, and I don't care who answers it. When we're talking about prioritizing the properties and a timeline for the transfer, that would then include the assessment and improvement plan would that come after? Wouldn't that be part of the timeline?
If we can do things beyond currently use them as parking lots, that would have to follow up after we actually have physical possession of the properties.
So we can't talk about improving them until we have them have our arms around them.
On the advice of counsel, we shouldn't talk about it.
Okay.
What is it we're talking about?
What we're going to do to make them better until after we have them.
We do know how much it'll cost us to maintain them, and we can make them better, a better parking lot and a better front door for us Metro, and much better for our patrons. It's just, can we turn them into an asset that'll more than pay that amount back is what we're not allowed to look at right now.
Okay.
What about
You lost it, huh?
I lost it years ago. just ask anybody, you know. I guess I'd feel more comfortable, Doug, if I had a number on how much it's going to cost me in liability insurance to insure 41 pieces of real estate in L.A., and a little more specific in terms of to maintain 41 pieces. You know, I appreciate the millions and millions, but around here that has a habit of, you know, getting two and three digits in there. But a better handle on just, you know, what it's going to cost and where the money's going to come from. I guess that's the other question. Do we have a source for the maintenance money or for the liability insurance?
Yeah, we do. Well, let us get you some detailed information. Right.
All right.
And it says in here the financial impact funding of $3.4 million for this program is included in the FY12 budget. So somewhere, at least that's what I'm seeing, so somewhere there must have been a number figured out.
That $3.4 million also includes other properties that we already own and maintain. So
okay.
that entire budget for maintenance of these types of properties is included in the current fiscal year budget.
And if we adopt the recommendation with my motion, my amendment, that would allow us the mechanism to, as I come back with more information about the sequencing of this, to get that type of information added to it.
I'll move it as amended then.
Second.
Yeah, and I have some public input.
Oh, so,
good.
Just one. Don Jones. Mr. Jones, please come forward.
Good afternoon, committee. My name is Don Justin Jones. I've just come from 3 weeks in Texas watching a phenomenon unfold down there that I think is significant for the process as I see it here. I think fiscal conservatism is the wave of the future, and the kind of contract that we see here that's open-ended with no definite boundaries is the kind of process that will find its end in the future. We cannot afford to have open-ended projects just because we have the power to raise bonds and spend money, other people's money. When these bonds were raised, I'm talking about the $44 billion, it was a different economic time. I point to the item that was here before, the 710 freeway completion, where billions of dollars are being proposed for companies that only exist in Europe with that capacity. We have to be more fiscally prudent, otherwise the wave that I saw in Texas will sweep this liberal process away and we will be the poorer for it. Caltrans builds great freeways. We don't want to have the same kind of highways they have from Brownsville to San Antonio. I ask you to reject this item until you have more specificity, more items, and a greater plan on how you can protect our pocketbooks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Any further comments?
Nope.
We need a second?
I second it. Oh, okay. You can second.
Motion and a second. Roll call.
This is with the amendment.
Yes.
With the amendment as amended.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is item number 13, Crenshaw Transit, LAX Transit Corridor.
Good afternoon. In December of 2009, the board adopted the locally preferred alternative for the Crenshaw LAX project, which is an 8.5-mile light rail line with six stations extending from the Expo line to the Aviation LAX station. Since that time, we've completed the final environmental document, the advanced conceptual engineering, and are in the process of completing the preliminary engineering. Requirements to the alignment, station locations, and the identification of a maintenance facility have also been completed. Today, we're asking the board to approve the project definition, which is based on the LPA, and incorporating the following elements. La Brea grade separation as a below-grade crossing rather than an aerial structure and moving the station 700 feet to the east. A below-grade segment from Exposition Boulevard to 39th Street. A partially covered trench adjacent to the LAX runways as an interim solution, and a maintenance facility near LAX at Arborvita and Belanca. We're also asking the board to certify the final environmental document and to authorize the CEO to file the notice of determination and adopt the fact and findings and statement of overriding consideration, as well as the mitigation monitoring program. I have Roderick Diaz, our environmental project director, with me, who will take you through a very brief presentation.
Just very briefly, it is an 8.5-mile light rail line with six stations as approved by the locally preferred alternative. Rini did run through the recommended changes earlier, the four that are indicated on the slide there. We do discuss within the environmental document three project options which are not part of the base project: a Crenshaw-Vernon station, a grade separation at Sentinella, and the Aviation Manchester station. The grade separation in discussions with the California Public Utilities Commission has not been determined to be required, and the two stations are not at this point recommended to be included as part of the base project. In terms of the project costs, the long-range transportation plan does provide $1.715 billion. We are at this point still developing project cost estimates. As of the most recent project cost estimate, we have been able to bring the overage over the project funding down from 48 to 100 to 30 to $50 million over the available funding, and we do continue with value engineering in order to bring the cost in line with the available funding. We do acknowledge that the project will not move forward unless the project costs are in alignment with the funding. In its May board meeting, the Crenshaw-Vernon station, the board did decide that the Crenshaw-Vernon station may be built if the construction bids for both the base project and the station option are within the $1.715 billion project funding amount. As next steps, after the board certifies and adopts the project, we will file a notice of determination with the LA County Clerk and the State of California Clearinghouse. We'll continue preliminary engineering and value engineering. The board will consider a life of project budget later this fall, and we will continue with the preparation of procurement documents for the construction phase. Just this past Monday, there was an industry review meeting with meetings to answer questions from prospective bidders. And that concludes my presentation.
Okay, I have a question. Actually, what I'm trying to do is stress something that you said, and that is that if we can't come in within budget, we will not start the project. Is that what you said?
That is, yes, according to the cost containment policy.
Out, yeah. Now, what if we get halfway through and all of a sudden it's way over? You're not going to stop it. You're going to try and get money from somewhere else?
Our construction department, and maybe Rob Ball, our director for construction management, who will be taking over this project, can go through it, but there are very strict and oversight, and the contract documents are written such that there is a contingency built into the budget, but we do not anticipate at this point in time that we will go over that contingency.
Good. Thank you. Are there any other questions? Yes, sir.
The report... on page 5 of the report says, I have two questions. One is on the cost and one is on something else. The page 5 of the report says the estimated project cost is approximately $48 to $100 million over the budget defined by our LRTP. I don't think I heard. I was busy reading this other communication. Did you address that issue at all?
We did address the issue, I guess at the time of the submission of the report, the cost estimate did indicate a $48 to $100 million overage in terms of the project costs over the project funding. The latest cost estimates since then have suggested that the costs are coming down and the cost is $30 to $50 million over. If there are any questions related to that, Rob Ball is leading the value engineering effort.
Could you just explain in broad terms how you've brought the cost down?
Well, sir, we've been in the preliminary engineering phase for over a year now. Okay, as we develop more engineering details, we've been scrubbing this project, and I literally scrubbing this project where we started. We've been able, through better engineering, cost reduction, value engineering, cut that gap down to where we're very close to budget now.
Yeah, I guess what I'm looking for is more specific, not micro details, but just examples of how you have scrubbed it and got it down.
For example, going under La Brea, one of the changes you saw here has actually reduced the cost from the aerial structure we had before. Also, moving the La Brea station to an at-grade configuration was also an example of how we reduced costs.
Is that the single biggest reduction that you've had in all of the value engineering?
No, we also have made progress with FAA Bladex trench. They've now signed off on what we call a partially covered trench. We also made very good progress with
how much did that save you?
In the range of $35-40 million. We've also made very good progress with the railroad out there. There is an existing freight track in that corridor. We are planning to come back in November for this board to actually agree to an agreement to pay the railroad X number of dollars to abandon that track. That alone saves us substantial millions of dollars.
How many?
The cost savings are in the range of 35 to 40 just for that BN track being abandoned.
And how does it save money? Just walk me through that.
Because we're able to optimize the light rail alignment within that corridor.
You're swallowing your words, and I'm having a hard time understanding.
We're able to optimize the light rail alignment in that corridor. We don't have to relocate 5 miles of freight track. It makes it easier for us to construct without an active freight track in that corridor and things like that, sir.
Okay, and so you're 30 to 50 million, you think, roughly over budget now or over the LRTP number?
Okay, we're at the end of the plan engineering phase, as Rini and Roderick indicated. We're in the process of finalizing a cost estimate for what we call the Life of Project budget that we'll bring back to you in October of this year. And again, we continue to refine our costs, and our costs actually are coming down as we do more engineering, better costing, and so forth.
But at this point, you say you're at between 30 and 50 million over?
Based on our current estimates, we are showing a gap of about 30 to 50, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Second question I had was this letter from the lawyer for the property that is our preferred site for the maintenance yard. It was just dropped on our desk. Anybody? Oh, so who circulated it?
We've got somebody who wants to speak under board staff.
Yeah, okay. So you guys haven't seen it either?
I've seen it.
Oh. Whose lawyers? Our lawyers or their lawyers?
No, theirs.
Okay, and I'll wait. Thank you for your answers.
Okay, any other questions before we go to public input? Chris Sutton, first to speak, to be followed by DJ Moore.
My name is Christopher Sutton. I'm the lawyer for a property owner in the Monrovia site regarding the Gold Line. And the reason why this line has to cut back on stations, has to cut back on grade crossings, has to cut back on assets, is because the MTA is spending way too much on the Gold Line in the San Gabriel Valley, which is a low ridership train to nowhere. Yet this train that you're approving the design today, and excluding stations, excluding improvements, this line is going to LAX, and so you're saying you're not going to have stations where people can get on the train to go to the airport, yet you're going to have the full funding of the Gold Line in the San Gabriel Valley, even though the Gold Line is violating the funding agreement with MTA, has not acquired the maintenance facility in Monrovia because of our lawsuits against the Gold Line. The Gold Line cannot show that its ridership numbers are equal to this line or the regional connector, where you've also eliminated a station. If you were to postpone funding of the Gold Line in the San Gabriel Valley, there would be sufficient money available to fully fund the connector, fully fund all the improvements on this line.
Talking about the funding. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let me explain. He segued from you're spending a lot of money on the Gold Line that you could be spending on Crenshaw.
Not really, but
that was yeah. What, okay. The next, I'm sorry.
Got it. Thank you.
Welcome.
I don't.
Good afternoon. My name is DJ Moore of Latham & Watkins, Lebanon LLC, which is one of the major property owners of the maintenance facility site, Supervisor Yaroslavsky. We've already commented extensively on the supplemental SEIS, EIR, concerning the selected Site 14, and NSHE wants to express its continued support for the Crenshaw Line in general, but continues to have concerns regarding the environmental impacts of developing the specific site, as well as the analysis of alternatives and relocation impacts from the existing facilities on the site. We've reviewed the final EIS, EIR, and we have submitted a detailed letter to you and believe that it does not adequately address some of our prior comments. We therefore respectfully request that you direct your staff to work with NSHE prior to moving forward on the EIR and the project so that we can address those concerns. And if you have any questions, Supervisor, I'd be happy to answer.
Do you have comments on whether we're spending too much on the Gold Line or not?
I do not.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that concludes the public hearing or public speaking part. Now, you want to ask your question again about the...
Well, it's a legal issue. I do think... I don't know enough about this. I didn't know that we were still in a dispute with this property owner. But I think you need to review this carefully and... do you dispute the it's unfair for me to ask you this because you probably haven't been able to scan this, but what I'd like to know is whether you dispute the assertions that are made by the lawyer for this property owner, whether we have adequately responded to his comments on this in this final EIR, and
I'll address the question.
Sure.
And without having read the full contents of the letter, having just received it, it appears that many of the comments they do cite reiterate many of the comments with the supplemental draft EIS, draft EIR, that we received, actually, to note, after the end of the comment period to the draft EIS, EIR, and the day before the last board meeting when the maintenance facility was to be considered. But I will note that we have looked at all of the comments and addressed the comments as we felt were adequate when we prepared the final EIS, final EIR. We did have also a process to work with all property owners. We sent all potentially affected property owners that are under that we would potentially purchase a certified letter offering them a meeting with both our engineering team, our environmental team, and our real estate team to explain the process by which we go through a property purchase in order to make the property owner whole. And I believe this property owner has been offered that meeting, and we have entertained a meeting with that property owner as well. Some of the details that they ask for in the context of this letter I think are not necessarily appropriate, because we do give ourselves flexibility when the context of design build contracts to move things within a facility, but the general sense that we have adequately analyzed all impacts associated with the maintenance facility at that site.
So is this property owner this is the property we want to acquire?
This is a property we want to acquire, and this
is he a willing seller? Is it now just a question of price, or is he not? Does he not want to sell?
It may be a question of price at this point. They haven't indicated a sense of willingness related to that. So, and we can't really enter into a negotiation with them until the project is actually adopted and the environmental document is certified.
And the record. And we receive a record of decision from the Federal Transit Administration.
But we can't build without the maintenance facility. I mean, we can't have the train without the...
Yes.
Fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you get anything resolved? I'm not sure we did. But
no,
that's
but I don't think this is the appropriate forum to have this discussion. So,
any other questions or comments? We have a request for a recommendation. Do you want to recommend that it go forward? Do you want to hold it over for more information? Do you want to you have your hand in.
I'll move it forward. Make the motion we move it forward to the board.
With or without recommendation?
Oh, I'd say with with the staff recommendation.
Okay.
For
a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any objections? All right, we'll move it forward to the board as a recommendation. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. You sit out there and I didn't say thank you. Shame on me. Next item on the agenda, number 14, Antelope Valley Line Infrastructure Improvement Strategic Plan.
I just ask one question back at the last one. It's just informational. Are you guys at the executive staff level still going through a validation process on these value engineering results to ensure that they are legit, that they are not overly promising more than they can deliver?
We are.
Wherever we use it, I mean.
Well, it should be wherever we use it, because we've been burned on this sort of thing before. And
Mr. Murthy could address it if you'd like, but I think we are.
I wouldn't mind if he would address it in 30 seconds or less. Yeah.
30 seconds.
Murthy,
the value engineering process, Murthy, to validate, to make sure that it's accurate.
We had a team from outside to come in and look at the current preliminary engineering design. They have made about 28 recommendations to reduce the cost of the project. Some of them violate our criteria and standards, so we may not be able to implement it. But majority of their comments are related to simplifying the station design, simplifying the station architecture, and try to use the construction technologies differently for curtain cover, et cetera. So we are taking into consideration all that, and that's when we come back to you in October, we would have taken all that into our estimating, and then we'll come back to you with the cost.
So you brought in somebody from the outside to do the value engineering?
Yes, sir.
I thought you were doing the value engineering in-house, and you brought somebody from the outside to validate.
No, we have done in-house value engineering, but we wanted to somebody from outside who is not associated emotionally or otherwise with the project to come in and take a fresh look at the project, and that's what we did. We brought a team from different agencies from outside, and they came in and looked at the whole thing.
And they have validated the value engineering that was done.
Yes, sir. They have. In addition to that, they have added more.
Pardon?
In addition to our value engineering, they have made comments how to go further reduce the cost. Those are the ones that we are evaluating against our standards and criteria, work with our operations. For example, the number of crossovers, number of traction power substations. They have made comments. We want to make sure our operations are in agreement with some of those.
Yeah. So was there any value engineering that we did in-house that this outside group took issue with?
No. No. They supported what we had suggested.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Murthy.
Thank you.
Item 14. Let's just follow that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Directors. I am Don Sepulveda, Executive Officer of the Regional Rail for Metro, and I'm coming to you today to talk with you about the Antelope Valley Antelope Valley Line Infrastructure Improvement Strategic Plan, and we're going to call it AVL Plan for short. It just makes it easier on everybody. So, real briefly, I wanted to talk, I'll give you a couple of quick updates. I did want to mention that the High Speed Rail Authority is actually developing their business plan, and that's going to be presented in October, early November. The reason I'm bringing it up now is because it is somewhat related to our partnership on the AVL study. They will recommend to include the Grapevine alternative, which has a direct impact on our study, and of course that will add 8 to 10 months to the EIR schedule should they do that, and what that does is that impacts how we prioritize some of our work on this study, and I'll go into that a little bit more in a moment. LOSAN, I wanted to talk briefly on this because this is somewhat related to our study as well. The LOSAN board has unanimously decided to move forward with local governance of the Amtrak Surfliner service, which we'll talk about more at the executive committee. This is the process has been long in coming. It actually provides a myriad of opportunities. It is a very wonderful opportunity for Southern California and precisely for Metro. So let's talk about the Antelope Valley Strategic Study. At this time, we are asking to amend the fiscal year budget as follows: $500,000 for the consultant for the AVL study, $500,000 for Metrolink and their modeling consultant, and additional $2 million to study the next two lines. And at the same time, we're also asking to extend the time frame of the study to report to the board on the findings in March of 2012, as opposed to December of 2011. The AVL line is a line that's straight up to the top. As it comes down into Union Station, it passes from Palmdale through the Soledad Canyon, down in through Santa Clarita, down through the San Fernando Inlet into Union Station. Portions of this corridor are actually on the Losan Route, the California Intercity Rail Route, as well as the High-Speed Rail Corridor, which stresses the interactivity between all these three functions. In April, the board approved a motion to study the AVL. This study was to analyze the corridor for enhanced safety and increased speeds and decreased travel times between Palmdale and Los Angeles Union Station. At the same time, the motion included extending this study to other lines in LA County. I will add that this study is actually the initial study, or the stepping stone, if you will, the kickoff of a regional rail prioritization for LA County as we move forward into the future and start preparing for some of the issues that are coming our way. And specifically, I'll mention member agencies that are feeding Los Angeles County, increasing their service, moving more trains into Los Angeles, and possibly decreasing our mobility with grade crossings and what have you, and various other issues that are coming along the way. Staff was to report as part of that motion on the study at the December board meeting. An RFP was issued to the planning bench in July, and proposals were due on August 19th. Interviews were conducted on September 7th, and we are in negotiations with a successful proposer at this moment, and we are expecting the contract actually in late September. Metrolink is going to be leading the modeling aspect of the study. This is our opportunity for LA Metro to take partnership with Metrolink as we become stewards of our right-of-way and move forward with our corridor. We are excited about this opportunity to actually work with this. We've been meeting regularly with Metrolink on this. As a matter of fact, Metrolink was actually on our selection committee for this consultant. Metrolink's received that scope and fee from their modeling consultant. We are reviewing it at the same time. I have used my red pen privileges all over it, and we'll be going back to them on that. And we will be working with an MOU with Metrolink to actually move forward with that portion of the work. And the whole concept of that is that we are going to basically be partners in the study. They're going to be having a team there. We're going to have a team there, and we're all going to work together to make this a cohesive study that grasps everything that we need to get into this study. So our next steps are, of course, the study. We're going to have a kickoff meeting with the project team. We're going to do some initial fact-finding. We're also going to have a high rail trip with all the key members of the team out on the corridor, and that means that we're going to have the key members of not only our consultant, but Metrolink's modeling consultant and Metrolink's key people. So we actually have all of the interested parties involved, and we get the right input as to what is working now, what is not working now, and that is going to be the key on this. At the same time, one of the things that we have found out in this procurement process, and there is a large difference between railroad engineering, as in passenger railroad, class one freight railroad, and transit engineering. And one of the we actually used our bench, our planning bench, to move this forward. We had to put some significant qualification requirements in those RFPs in order to have the properly qualified team to be on this. We wanted a team with good railroad experience to do this. So we found that we are lacking that at Metro. So we are moving forward with the concept of an RFQ for a railroad planning bench that has a cadre of teams ready to do railroad planning efforts for us as we move forward with some of the other studies that we have to do. It's going to be a key for us, and it's going to help us along with some of these procurements. At the the same time, we are developing the next two corridors for study. There was some talk earlier about San Bernardino and some of those things. We are moving forward with San Bernardino is the most heavily populated or used Metrolink line. So we believe that that is the next corridor to study. San Bernardino line has some issues with aging infrastructure and what have you, and it's also the express trains and things. So we think that we can do a lot of good there, but at the same time, we're also looking to partner with San Bernardino as we move this forward. We believe it's a concerted effort between the two member agencies. We want to make sure that we are joined at the hip on that one. And at the same time, we're also looking at Ventura as the other study on that one, and that one has its different challenges with VCT. And being where they are. So, as I mentioned, this is conclusion. We are asking for this funding. If you recall the motion, the reason why we're going forward to and asking for specific funding items here is because the original motion established where the capital improvement funding was going to come from, but not the funding for the study. So we have to go back to you and get that allocated and get that straight. So this is what we're talking with you about today, and I'd like to entertain any questions you may have.
Comments? My question does not have to do with the statement that said the contract procurement has been delayed due to procurement policies, and I don't want to get into that now. I just want to note that I think that's a problem. Motion?
I'll move it for Mike.
Second? Okay. Any objections? So ordered. So you
Thank
have
you.
Your you have your recommendation. Next item, number 15, freeway beautification pilot project.
Yes, Madam Chair.
As a result of the budget themes that the board adopted, we've taken the lead on a beautification pilot project for a couple of freeways. I have staff with me, Ken Coleman and Ian Fairweather. We'll do a quick report for you on what we've been up to date.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, board members. This receive and file report will give you a basic idea of what this project is supposed to be for, what we're trying to accomplish, as well as where we're at today. What we're doing is basically trying to improve the mobility, safety, and efficiency, and probably foremost the appearance of the freeway systems, which act as the front door to many of the neighborhoods throughout the Los Angeles community area. How we're going to do this is we're looking to augment current Caltrans activities. We are not looking to replace them. We're looking to work side by side with them to see how we can improve what they're currently doing today. We will coordinate with Caltrans, and we have been coordinating with them extensively, work with the community in both our pilot areas, which we'll talk about real quick. We plan on using both private contractors as well as community organizations to try and support this effort. Next. Our pilot locations that we have identified with Caltrans are two. It's on the 110 north from the four-level interchange, which is the 110-101 interchange, down to the Exposition Boulevard around USC. And then on the 710, it goes up from State Route 60 in the north down to the 405 area in the south. Some of the work that we've already started, to give you an idea, is this actually is not directly within our pilot project area, but we worked and teamed up with Wells Fargo and Caltrans on five murals that they have identified and put up some replicas along the 101 corridor. The reason why we looked at this is there are some murals on the 110 that if this works, we can take this category and use this sort of as an option to take care of the murals that you see on the 110 that are graffitied up. Next.
Did I miss Caltrans going out of business?
No.
Or is this just the result of hiring too many former Caltrans folks over here that we're now doing all their jobs for?
Actually, it wasn't any of our ideas, but somebody else figured we'd know how to do it, so we took it on.
Okay, but this is, again, it's the same thing, but this actually costs us.
No, we are not doing this to replace any work that Caltrans needs to do and will continue to do. We are adding to that with the idea of beginning to make our freeway corridors here in Los Angeles look more like we'd like them to look like.
And
so we're basically doing what Caltrans should be doing at some degree, and they're not, so we're doing, I mean.
We're doing the extras.
Oh, they don't.
The extras.
What's the budget?
The budget we've set aside for this over a two fiscal year period is $4.6 million. It's coming from Prop C 25%. And the idea there is to try and figure out what can we do, set up some procedures and protocols that we can then hand over to Caltrans, do some strategic items such as we've talked about strategically planting vegetation in areas that will deter vandals from continuing to come to those areas. Bougainvillea or plants with thorns are one of those items that Caltrans normally doesn't take account of. There are also certain policies and procedures, mainly in terms of weed abatement, that Caltrans has had some problems moving forward with. So part of our effort here is also to go in and actually do an actual audit of Caltrans maintenance activity to see how they're doing their work. Where can we point them to areas that they can actually be some improvement? Where can we help on a non-monetary basis to try and help them out, whether it's to reallocate or tell them how to reallocate their sources?
Well, that sounds meaningless because we're putting up $4.5 million to actually do, as Richard says, some of their work.
Well, let me explain something to you. Okay. There are those of us who met 2.5-3 years ago with the president of UP, and we had issues along the freeways. I mean, you can look at the pictures here.
No, I know the freeways are horrible.
And it was not just the issues of the graffiti, it was the issues of the couches and other stuff along the freeway, and we were given assurance by this gentleman that it would be taken care of. Nothing ever happened.
That wasn't Mr. Fanling when he was running Caltrans, that was it?
No.
No.
That was UP.
That was Union Pacific at the time. Yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Fanling used to generally say no to me and my part of family.
Yeah, well, that.
We're doing UP's work instead of Caltrans.
Actually, we're doing work to try to make our community look better.
I agree with you on that.
I mean, I cannot tell you how excited I was when I saw a freeway without graffiti across it. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. This is the world in which we live.
Let me be clear. I'm not trying to torpedo the pilot program in any way. I'm just trying to see what the end game is here. Prop C 25% is totally discretionary, fungible money for us. And this is...
The end game is to begin to engage. We're working with a series of community-based organizations, including some of the local business improvement districts. Wells Fargo is one partner. We're trying to begin to engage the civic authorities, if you will, much better in the program, see if we can reinstitute some of what used to happen back in the 50s and see if we can help excite more than just Metro, but be that nucleus for helping us all take a little better care of what we've got out here.
Right, okay, that's all great.
That's the end game.
That's really kind of separate from how much money we're going to spend countywide on this sort of thing as a result of the pilot. And I have no problem with targeting areas that are really in need, and this is certainly these two corridors are as in need as any of them. I travel them frequently enough. So I support that. I just want to understand.
Yeah, understood.
Today, but down the line,
what is the long-term goals and what's the end game?
How about sound walls? This is another issue that Caltrans isn't doing.
And actually, we are looking at if sound walls, and that's part of where some of the appropriate plannings would come into. Can we control access to where the graffiti taggers seem to be getting into sound walls, or can we do a better job of getting more people working on the Adopt a Wall program so that we can get more graffiti removal much quicker on that? So the whole idea is to bring all that together at the end.
Okay. I'm fine.
Okay. The last slide is what we've done on the 710. As you can see, we've taken advantage of some Caltrans freeway closures to go out there and have some crews remove graffiti on four bridges, two Union Pacific bridges, one BNSF, and one Chevron Utility gas pipe bridge over there.
and we are continuing to hit them with graffiti removal during this time period to try and ensure that they stay clean. We're also going to work with both Caltrans and the utility and the railroads to try and see if we can get them to install or determine some additional deterrent measures along those to try and keep people off the bridges as much as possible. That concludes the report at this time.
I'm sorry, the question I was asked was whether the sound walls get hit too, and as I saw it, some of them do, but a lot of it's
the wing walls.
Yes. What we originally focused in on during this closure period at this particular time was to take care of the bridges because those required a full freeway closure at the time. As we're going down on each of those closure times, if we see graffiti along a sound wall or on a bridge structure that is not associated with these four bridges, we are having the contractor take care of those as well. The other aspect to put in mind, the two corridors were chosen sort of are unique. One, of course, we're talking about the downtown corridor, the amount of traffic and the visibility going through that area. The 7th and corridor specifically will have a lot of construction activity coming up. So we're going to want to see how, in a construction environment, can we structure things to improve maintainability, including graffiti removal and stuff like that during that period. That's it.
No, I'm not ready. I request to speak. Excuse me. It's Mr. Klugman who wants to speak.
Could you put that slide back up? Look at that. You'd have to be a lunatic to have to hang over that bridge to do that graffiti on the side of the... Which means they'll do it anyhow. You can beautify it and do whatever you want. It's almost like immigration from Mexico to here. If they want to get in, they're somehow going to find a way to get in. And if they want to do that junk, they're going to... Although some people are going to call that modern art nowadays. But the other thing is, I don't see what we're paying for. Doesn't this sound like an AmeriCorps thing? Doesn't it sound like if we arrested more people, we could fine them and get more money, and we could get community service out of them so they could remove graffiti and stuff like that? But I don't think we should. We should spend the money to find some kind of spray that when somebody puts graffiti on there, you can wipe it off with soap and water. That would be a great invention.
There are a lot of cities who agree with that because they get out daily and clean up the graffiti. All right. Motion? Second?
Second.
Any objections? So ordered. Not next item is...
Item 16 is a receive and file item. It's an update on Measure R Highway subway operational improvements in Las Virgenes Malibu subregion. We've been working with them to move a series of their projects forward, and attached for you is a listing of their latest activities. No real changes, anything that requires a vote, just an update for you on how they're proceeding again with their program.
Moved and seconded. No objections, so ordered. Next item, number 17.
And item 17 is very similar in nature. It's, again, a receive and file on the Measure R Highway sub-regional operational improvements in the South Bay subregion. They're doing a great job. We have a great partnership going with the South Bay, and they're moving forward with a series of projects. Attached for your information is a list with some minor things which do not require board approval, some slight changes in a little bit of how the money flows between project to project, but no changes overall in budget or progress on the projects.
No objections, so ordered.
Yeah.
Have a report from
Don Sepulveda.
Mr. Sepulveda.
Okay, I'm going to be very brief because you've seen enough of me. And our time is short. You've already seen most of the updates from a regional rail standpoint earlier in my earlier presentation. I will add to this that We have had a very good meeting today. We are now represented on the High Speed Rail Task Committee for the Chamber of Commerce, and we had a great meeting with one of the board authority board chairs, or excuse me, representative directors, Matt Toledo, and that was a very effective meeting today. We brought forward some of our ideas on how high-speed rail needs to move forward in Southern California, so you're going to see some actions coming out of that task committee as it moves forward. There's actually going to be a pretty comprehensive report next month when we start coming through on some things. A couple of things I did want to mention very clearly is that we are going to be moving forward with a number of items for you. We had a staff strategic planning session and came up with no less than 18 projects and initiatives. Now, some of them are longer term than others, but we see some nice movement in regional rail activities in Southern California. And, of course, the last two items I want to mention is the report on LOSAN for tomorrow and, of course, the report on Metrolink for tomorrow afternoon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? I have public comment from Chris Sutton.
Again, I'm an attorney for a property owner in Monrovia. The Gold Line Foothill Authority is in violation of their funding agreement with MTA. MTA needs to calendar a matter where it would review the funding for the Metro, the Gold Line in the San Gabriel Valley, and reallocate that money to these other projects like the 7th and Flower Station, the Crenshaw Line, that are being underfunded, while a low ridership line in the San Gabriel Valley is being overfunded and in violation of the contract they have with the MTA. They cannot deliver assurances that they can acquire this property by the deadline. I think it's the end of this month. They are prevented because of the lawsuits we filed. MTA needs to seriously audit and think about reprogramming what now apparently is $1.4 billion. On Monday, the Gold Line's Finance Committee said they're increasing their budget by $256 million for some reason. You need to seriously look at what the Gold Line is doing and whether this money is being wasted and could be better spent on high-density, high-capacity lines.
Thank you.
Thank you.